Tom, are you ready, Tom?
Yes.
Okay, do we have any audience participation at all?
No, not today.
Okay. Go to the minutes. I need a motion to accept the minutes from May 19th, 2010.
Second.
Mr. Johnson and Mr. Bissler, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? They ask for discussion. Go to three staff reports. Financial progress report, June 30th, 2010. We'll need a motion on this.
Okay, financial progress report was in your folders as attachment 3A. This one's a little more significant than the last one because this does represent the closeout of state fiscal year 2010, which ended June 30th. And if you look down at line 11 at the very bottom, AMX was well within budget. We expended 73% of last year's budget. That money does carry over for the next 6 months. And we're going to talk to you about our planning grant program later on the agenda, and some of that surplus funding will funnel into that program. So I'm pleased to report we're far into the black, and if you have any questions, I would be glad to answer those.
Any questions at all? Do we have a motion, please?
Move,
right. First over here in a second, I'll give it to Mr. Klein. Second the motion. Any discussion at all? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Go to a technical progress report.
Okay, thanks once again. Technical progress, I'll try to keep this brief today because we do have a really full agenda and want to let you get out of here long before the sun goes down. Pleased to report that we did just come out with our new website in the past week, amatsplanning.org. Encourage all of you to check it out if you haven't done so already. We're pretty excited about it, both for the look of the site and also for the content that's on there. Some of you, myself included, might have experienced problems with some of the pages loading up. That's what I've been told by the technical people. If you have an older browser, so if you download Internet Explorer 8, you should be able to have it come up. And Curtis has been working with our web developer to have a message come up to tell you to upgrade your browser, basically. So let us know, though, if you, any feedback you have on it, content-wise or otherwise. One of the great things about the new website is the staff has pretty much 100% creative control over it now, where we can really easily change things on our own. And so we can, you know, if you notice problems, let us know and we can update that fast, or things you'd like to see up there. Another project that we are working on right now, and your communities will probably be contacted over the next month or two, we're going to start working on a bike users map, which basically is going to assess in a fairly crude way, but hopefully useful way, still the basically bikeability of roads in our area. The MPO in Columbus, MORPC, did a similar map. We're kind of following their lead on it. And one of the things we hope to get out of this is then using it for future bike planning to look at maybe roads that could be upgraded to include bike lanes or other things that would make them more bikeable for the public. Traffic counting program is well underway. We've been doing quite a few traffic counts. If you do have requests for any areas you'd like to have counted, we'll be doing it for about the next 2 months. So please feel free to contact Dave Pillay in our office. And that was really all I had to report for today. If you have any other questions on anything that we've been up to, I'd be glad to answer those.
Anybody has any questions? Comments? All right, thank you. We'll go to C. This will be attachment 3C, status of AMATS allocated federal funds.
Thank you. Our funding program table up on the screen, the same one with the folders at the door. This fiscal year 2010 ended here this past June 30th. If you look at the bottom of that table.
Could you get into the mic, please?
Fiscal year 2010, we ended up with a balance of about $11 million. That's definitely more than usual. There's a couple reasons for that. One most important reason that happened is that we've had several projects that came in under bid, and a couple of them were exceptionally under the bid amounts. So we do have a great balance here for fiscal year 2010. And then also, as usual, we have projects that get delayed and they were pushed out of 2010 into fiscal year 2011. The new projects that were approved for funding back in March, we're almost completed doing the scope meetings on those projects. We should have that done here probably by the end of summer. And then the last thing I wanted to mention under this item is our stimulus projects. As was decided at our last meeting in June, as these projects close out, they're all under construction now, a couple of them have been completed. And as they close out, if there's any additional federal stimulus funds that are returned to AMS, they will go on Akron's Gilbush Avenue Bridge project. So at this point, there's $131,000 in stimulus funds that are currently in the Gilbush Avenue Bridge project. With that, that's all I had on this item. If anybody has any questions, I'd like to answer.
Any questions at all? All right, thank you. Bozon, thank you. We'll go to number four in old business, resolution 2010-XX, which is really a draft supporting an increase in the federal gasoline tax. You have an attachment 4A. I'd like to open up. Can somebody talk about that, or is it good to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll say a couple words about this just to bring you up to date on what's happened since the last meeting. But definitely the intention of this item is for you guys to all be able to discuss this. You might recall at the last meeting I'd done a presentation on the idea of having a resolution of support for increasing the gas tax and a little bit about other transportation financing and policy issues, specifically at the federal level. From our discussion at the last meeting, that was fairly well received, at least to the point that this committee had directed the staff then to come back and put together a draft resolution for all of you to review, discuss, modify as you saw appropriate. And then the plan was, if you felt like going forward with it after today's meeting, it would come back as a actual resolution on the September agenda for action on. A couple of Ohio's other MPOs, Morpsey down in Columbus, TMACOG, which is an MPO in Toledo, have also been working on similar resolutions. There's also this item, actually, just in the last week or two, has gotten a lot more publicity in the press. I think the Beacon Journal ran an article last week on some sort of a vehicle miles traveled tax or an increase in the gas tax. There's been some discussion in the Columbus Dispatch. One of the things I did between the last meeting and now, because it is an issue that I feel pretty strongly about, is wrote an editorial in the AMS quarterly newsletter about the need for considering this and some other transportation-related issues. And I was very humbled and surprised to learn, actually, Mayor Lyons had told me that he was at a meeting with Senator Voinovich up in Cleveland, and he had actually referred to that editorial and said he was going to share some of it with the Senate, which that was something I never expected to hear, but I was very pleased that that was filled, the idea was filtering up into Congress. And I know some of our members have had discussions with Congresswoman Sutton and with Congressman Ryan, and I think both of their offices indicated that it was something that they would be willing to consider supporting, most likely after the election and during the lame duck session. So that was kind of where that stood with some of the congressional people as far as the idea. To the resolution at hand, basically it does three things the way it's written. The first one is that it says the policy committee supports a 10-cent per gallon increase in the federal gasoline tax. That is something where that number came from. There were two different congressional panels that had recommended that. There also, it's been endorsed by the American Trucking Association and the American Chamber of Commerce, both of which I think are safe to say organizations that don't usually just support tax increases. The second thing that the resolution does is it recognizes, and this was based on some conversations I had with some of you, I think, Mickey, you would raise this issue, that acknowledging this would be more of a short-term solution, that a longer-term strategy should be to come up with a funding mechanism that wouldn't be as dependent on selling petroleum. And then the third part of the resolution has some bullet points related to policy committee encouraging Congress to pass a new transportation bill in 2011. With that, that was really all I had to say on that issue. I'd definitely be glad to answer any questions, but my plan was to turn it back over to the chairman and then have him lead a discussion with all of you on your feelings on the resolution, if you wanted to modify it or move forward with it. So that I'll turn it back to the chairman.
Now, if you look at the May 19th minutes, there's a lot of information, folks, about what everybody discussed. A lot of comments were made in regards to that. This legislation, of course, doesn't have really a sponsor or anything like that. It's just in general, everybody getting together and seeing if you want to do something like this. So I'm going to open up the floor. Anybody like to go ahead and add any more? Really need your comments on this. Mayor.
Mr. Chairman, I guess at first blush, I look at this and I, of course, it related to my own city budget where we spend an inordinate amount of time working on it daily. And there's always a tendency to want to raise rates, raise taxes, raise whatever, because we in government need more money. And I don't see that changing in the near future, by the way. But we have to remember that what we're doing here is we're passing that cost on to people who many times are not in a position to take it. And I guess my message is that we in government all have to start living within our budget. Now, I realize from Jason's standpoint and from some other people's standpoint, I mean, they want more money to do more things, and there's no doubt about it. But the reality is that the economy's down. And ostensibly, if the economy's down, we should be able to do more with less. If we're bidding projects correctly, if we're doing all the right things, ostensibly, we shouldn't need any more money. And yet, we're saying we do. I guess I'm troubled by that. I guess I'm troubled by the fact that we can't do more with less, that we can't leverage our position to get as much done going forward as we have in the past, that instead we'd rather put that on people who, again, can least afford to sustain that additional cost. I would vote against this, and I'm not against progress, but I don't think today's the time. I mean, everybody's suffering right now, and the economy, despite what you hear coming out of Washington, at least on our level, we don't see it improving at all. I've got as many people on unemployment today as I did a year ago. So I don't know. I don't know where we're heading with this, but I'm very troubled by it. I think we're misdirected, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you for your comment. This did come up because Mayor Robert, because there hasn't been a tax increase in that gas for 17 years now. And it was, what, 18? And I'm just bringing this up for the fact, okay? Or was it? It was
18.4 cents.
Okay. 18.4 is right now. I have no idea what the state is right now. Do you?
28.
It's 28? It's 10 cents more, just for the record. Yes, sir?
Now, I have to also add...
Is it clever?
This is a regressive tax, I think, and very negative impact on a lot of people are unemployed and are low point. But at $2.70 a gallon, this is a tax rate now of 54 cents a gallon for 20% product cost tax, federal and state. That to me is a very high number. I don't disagree at all with Jason's supposition that this is an unsustainable transportation funding model we're in, but to put the burden again back into the people is a wrong, absolutely wrong approach. Fundamental answer is here is the cost of gas has driven the usage down. Good thing. That's a good thing for us. But to add more cost also drives it to continuing down the spiral we're into today. This is exactly the wrong thing to do at the wrong time. And as County Commissioner Smiles brought up at the last meeting, this should be a roll call vote at this committee level. And I think this committee should affirm that right now that they're willing to do a personal roll call vote on this issue when it comes up.
Okay, thank you.
Did you, Mr. Pat?
Uh-huh.
Did you have a comment?
No, I said you can
call. Oh. Mayor Lyons.
Well, I can appreciate the
about increasing fees and taxes. But I think one thing that distinguishes this is that it is a tax or a fee that's related specifically to infrastructure investment, and where most of our taxes and fees are related to just the general revenue that's spent on anything that the government wants to spend it on. I think that this is not the time to be restrictive in our investment in infrastructure. I think that that's a mistake. The tax on gasoline has not been attached to inflation, so it has actually gone down proportionately over time. So I think if we look at this in the context of government operations and where we should be investing our money, I think that this is the appropriate approach to funding infrastructure, because it's related to the utilization of that infrastructure. So on that general point, I will note I was in a meeting where Senator Voinovich quoted Jason's article, and he has introduced a proposal to increase the gas tax in the Senate. And I think that he's always been a fiscal conservative, and I appreciate his willingness to support that, because I think it makes sense. If we ignore the reality of our dependence on fossil fuels and gasoline, the oil, and not attach some costs to our utilization of it, I think we're also historically making a mistake, because the price of gas has continued to go up without a gas tax. I think if we had implemented more of an increase sooner, we would have seen, from a policy standpoint, less demand, less of our resources as a country going to other countries. I think there are lots of reasons that it does make sense. So I am supportive of it. I'm willing to do a roll call vote on it. And that's how I look at it.
Any more comments?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think it should be noted that to rehash, but nonetheless, it's significant. Jason's editorial, or whatever you want to call it, clearly indicates that Congress had to put $8 billion into the trust fund because it was broke, self-sustaining fund was broke. They had to put $19.5 billion more into it. Something has to be done to fix this, because we can't, you'll stop the federal highway program. I mean, you're looking real seriously at stopping the federal highway problem. And everybody in this room knows that that is thousands and thousands of construction jobs that pay good money. The price of gas at the pump goes up 5 to 10 cents every other day. Goes up, goes down. That's the world we live in today. And I did indicate to Jason that a funding mechanism for the trust fund that is clearly more stable is what needs to be obtained for the future. This 10 cent a gallon increase is just a stopgap measure, but I do think it is the right way to go.
Thank you. I don't think, I want to hear your comments, but I don't think we have to take a vote today on this. Unless somebody pushes me, I mean. I do want to get direction on this. So, Mr. Bissler.
Fortunately, when we vote, we're not going to increase the tax by 10 cents a gallon. That's not our job. This is a recommendation going to the federal government to say, if nothing else, it's going to get them to open their eyes and take a look at it. And I think, I understand your point of view to vote against it, But I think really when you look at it, we just want them to take a look at how this is going on. And right now, the money that they're providing us to do a lot of this is all done on the backs of my granddaughter and yours. And that's even worse than actually using it, making the people that use the roads pay for it, in my humble opinion.
Thank you. Mr. Darwish.
If we're going to wait for the feds to help us finance our infrastructure, we have a long wait. And we have a donor state. So the 10 cents, by the time it funnels through the doors of Washington and come to Ohio, we'll be lucky to get 1 cent back. My recommendation is to go like what happened a few years ago through a state gasoline tax, not federal, because that state gasoline tax comes to us here as the locals for our local match. We still have problems with our local match. So even if the feds say, okay, we're going to give you this, do we still have the funding for the local match?
Very well taken. Mayor Willard?
Yeah, I just to respond to that. I mean, to me, the way the Congress has reacted over the last couple of years, I'd rather they keep their eyes closed. Because with eyes wide open, I mean, I've never seen so horrific spending. And as this gentleman says, we're now broke beyond broke. I mean, why would we encourage Congress to spend more money? I mean, we've got to start living within our budget. And to Mr. Lyons' comment about Senator Voinovich, I don't see him as a fiscal conservative. I'm sorry. I mean, I got you a laundry list a mile long of things that he spent money on that I would certainly disagree with. My message is just simply we've got to live within our budget. We've got to prioritize. And to the point of, the infrastructure is not seen, so, you know, sometimes we ignore it. That's our job to prioritize. I think we say, okay, what's important, what isn't? I mean, we're putting a fence around the bridge down here at some astronomical figure. Now, I'm not for suicides, but how important was that compared to everything else on the agenda? I mean, it was that critically important? The bridge had been there for 20 years. Yeah, some people have jumped off of it, and that's a shame. I'm not endorsing that. But all I'm saying is, why don't we take our budget and figure out, okay, what's the top things, and let's do them first, and if we don't get to the bottom, then we don't get to the bottom until the economy comes back around. That's all I'm saying. I don't disagree with you, Mayor Lyons. I mean, we've got things to do. But we also have, I think, a responsibility to our constituents to stay within our budget, just like they have to.
Okay. I think inflation-wise, talk about budgets, but inflation is just, you know, it's not the same as what the gas tax has been in the past 20 years. I mean, it's really outpaced that. And so we're on a fixed income for gas fuel tax, but everything else, all your roads and everything else is going up. Just a comment to make on that. Yes, fast.
I've heard both the comments, and my feeling is, do we really know what this tax is going to do to our economy? You know, as Don said, we've got problems in our economy. I'm from Portage, and I know that from talking to other mayors and township trustees in our county. We've got some serious problems. We've got, the judge was telling me we've got 1,000 foreclosures filed this year in a small county. That's a lot. We've got tremendous losses in income on our local government because the sales taxes are down. My feeling is that no one has really adequately examined, at least to my satisfaction, what is this going to do to our economy. And, you know, we're here in the transportation capital of the United States, Akron. And many of our constituents, that's got to speak for all of us, make their living through transportation, roadway, all the different companies around. We've seen DHL leave the state. 8,000 jobs are gone. We've seen NCR. How many jobs were lost in Dayton? That is also, well, it's more of an intellectual, but what I'm saying is that before we decide what we're going to do, I think we better find out for sure what impact this is going to have on our own people. And I think that's very key. we discussed this at our council, and we were as divided as this group seems to be. And I, you know, we have people, liberal, conservative, on our council. So, but I don't have any. I think we need to decide whether you're, and maybe whether what we do doesn't make any difference. But I think before you make a decision, we should know for sure that this is going to be helpful to our area and to our state, and to specifically our you know, people that we represent.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Clare.
I think looking at this purely from a operational perspective, I think the projects that we're talking about, what we want to do is try to achieve with this money is to maintain what we have. It isn't about anything new. It's maintaining what we have. And those of us that work with this every day, sure, there's been a luxury of low prices right now to get a lot more work done. Is that going to continue? I doubt it. But I think there's got to be, you know, a tax is one alternative to do this. I don't know, you know, I think maybe there are others we could look at. And again, just listening, there's a wide variety of thoughts here and perspectives people come from. You know, you have the political end, which, you know, you have the constituents to answer. From the technical end, you're going to hear it because the road is like driving all populous. There's got to be a blend here of what happens. And you know, something hasn't changed in 18 years. I think something has to be looked at. Is this the mechanism? You know, I think everybody, wherever you work today, you're looking at everything you do. It isn't just one area you're looking at. You're looking at every aspect of what you do. And I think in transportation, that's what's going to have to happen. You're going to have to look at every aspect of how this thing runs. And maybe, you know, from 20 years ago with all the M funds and all of that good stuff that changed to STP, and there weren't even any enhancement like that. These are all kinds of things that evolve over 20 or 30 years. And I think that's maybe a way to look at this too, because as Mickey said, it is stopgap. That's all it is. It isn't a final solution. And I think that we see this every day. You know, there's just a lot to maintain now.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Anybody else will take a couple more comments on this? And then next meeting is September 29th, so give you a lot to think about that. Jack?
I'd like to point out in this resolution, we're talking about basically just paragraph 2 is the contentious one. There's a lot of other items in this resolution that we potentially can't come to an agreement upon the gas tax agreed on. Particularly in paragraph 4, there's things in there that, you know, we see as problematic in federal legislation. And,
Where are you at? Okay.
You know, I look at 4C, you know, convoluted system with dozens of separate transportation funding categories. Anybody that works in the transit field recognize the alphabet soup for different programs. The money's on us so chopped up that the grants become useless because they're too small and have too many restrictions on them. Paragraph 4, or 4D in particular, federal dollars can't typically be used for operating funds, and most of our transit agencies, that's where they have the need, operating funds. They can get all the new buses they want. You can't get good drivers, pay the drivers, or buy the diesel fuel to run. Those are problems with the system that you know, absent the gas tax issue, the federal government needs to address as well. And at the very least, we should consider those issues.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Mr. Hansen.
Since 91, when ICE-T was originally passed, there was a lot of discussion back then about what is the federal role in the future of transportation. And the federal role at that time was being discussed as the major roads. It wasn't the resurfacing. It wasn't some of these other things that we're getting into. And what has happened is we've compartmentalized a lot of the funding in future bill or more recent bills to set up too many categories, in my mind, that limit us in having the flexibility to use the money where it's most needed. And I noticed in your resolution, knowing that there's no passenger rail coming to this area, we're supporting passenger rail in number A, 4A, the way it reads to me. We are asking, indeed, that we change some of those categories and allow transit funds to be spent on operations, which is where we need them to be spent. I think we ought to be aimed at anything to change the way that the federal rules are so that we can use the money where we really need to use it. But we also have got to quit adding things that don't pay into the gas tax trust fund, which support the infrastructure. And those things need to either be removed or find a way to tax them. And to add passenger rail to that, which has nothing to do with saving the infrastructure, just ludicrous in my mind.
Okay, thank you. Do you have a comment on A?
Yeah, if I could clarify A, kind of, I think we're actually in agreement on that. The intention of A is to say, one thing I'm incredibly frustrated by, both as the director of this agency and a citizen, is I look at the federal policy, I don't know what they're doing. They're spending $8 billion on passenger rail, at the same time they're spending hundreds of billions of dollars on highways. And the intention of this bullet isn't to advocate one or the other, it's to just say, it's to kind of to your point that we're throwing money all over the place at everything, and I don't see the sense, I don't think we should spend a dollar on passenger rail if we're going to continue to do the same policies of widening highways. I mean, you look at even in the 3C corridor, we just widened I-71 all the way to Columbus. Now we're spending money on the rail. That kind of stuff goes on all over the country. I don't think it makes sense. So that's A is more to that point of spreading the money around without any sort of a cohesive plan.
Well, the way I read that, Jason, is you're asking for that to still be in the National Transportation for passenger rail. And I'm not sure it should be. I don't see passenger rail being that successful anywhere except on the Eastern Seaboard. And, you know, maybe that's right for them. I would rather see us have the ability to choose how we spend the money to meet our local needs, rather than having to spend 2% has to go to bike paths, 2% has to go to something else. There's too many of these requirements that tie our hands. But the last point I wanted to make was, you know, I read in the paper in the last couple days about Akron may lay off 199 police officers. If we're going to raise the tax around here, is transportation infrastructure the right one right now, this year, to spend our money on when we can't even put a police department out on the highway? And I think every mayor around here has got the same problem.
Amen.
It's not just Akron.
Amen.
And I think for this agency to come out and support a tax with blinders on without knowing the rest of the world's out there, I think is a mistake.
Okay, anybody else? Is it okay with you? Yes, sir. Do you have one more? Somebody else have anything?
I'm just scratching my head.
Oh, you were. Yeah, this is the tough one. Is it okay if we wait till September 29th before, you know, get everybody thinking about it a little bit more, and then go ahead and take a voice vote, roll call at that point, that time? But I have a problem with that. Okay. We will table that for the next meeting on September 29th. Everybody can be thinking about that and bring your comments to that meeting. That will be a deciding factor. I will move on to new business. 5A, Connecting Communities Draft Report. We'll get everybody to get this. Everybody pick this up in front. We need one. There's some more up at the front tables. Get them. Who's doing the report on this? Okay. Crystal?
Hi, good Good afternoon. My name is Krista Linders, and I'll be presenting Connecting Communities. That hopefully you guys all got the document. I'll try to be brief. You have the full draft report hopefully in front of you. This is an initiative that AMS has been working on along with the working group for about the past year. Essentially, it looks at how land use and transportation, you know, there's the obvious connection, but kind of looking at the linkages between those and doing a lot of analysis. It'll help guide AMS investment and primarily in transit, bicycle, pedestrian, more the different multimodal uses. We're doing this, obviously, the transportation and land use connection, how, you know, different kinds of urban sprawl and where we develop and how is straining the existing system. Kind of the lack of direction as a region for bicycle and sidewalk investment, looking at where that should go. As a regional agency, AMS has the ability to sort of pull all the data together and give a good overview. So that's sort of the crux of it, and then help improve interagency coordination. And again, as we're a regional agency, kind of help provide data. Essentially, we've been doing a series of inventories from sidewalks, transit routes, bikes, combining a lot of the 208 wastewater plans for our region. We did zoning, land use, overlaying those and looking at where the gaps are. We created planning areas to sort of look at, you know, what kind of density, where these things are, to create a framework for looking at where investment could go. And then we created recommendations. I'm going to go through just a couple of the maps that we did. One is looking at sidewalks, bus stops, and where the bikeways are. You can see the transit routes are the green and purple overlaid with the sidewalks and the bikeways, and just sort of looking at where those gaps are. And then off of that, we did a kind of priority area gap analysis. This isn't all-encompassing, but it highlights some of those major retail commercial areas that are, you know, maybe served by transit but don't have sidewalks or other connections. Another one we did is looking at parcel sizes. The more darker the red is, denser, it obviously then goes out to rural areas. You can see sort of where the communities are the most dense, those traditional core communities, and how and where we've grown outward. And then that was one of the major inputs into, we did a planning areas. And this just sort of gives an overview of the urban form to look at what type of investment makes sense where. We talked about, you know, looking at those priority areas and, you know, how do you prioritize things. And this just sort of gives an overview of maybe, you know, a regional bike trail would make sense in certain areas, or, you know, like bike lanes mainly make sense in a few areas, especially with budget constraints. And then the recommendations, each of these has a lot more specific strategies. They start on page 22. I'll just go through sort of general topics. One and two deal with how to improve bicycle and pedestrian facilities and looking at those. Part of that is AMS is going to create a bicycle and a pedestrian plan that will go into more detail, looking at routes and traffic volumes and that. And as Jason mentioned, we've also started kind of a user's map. Number three is looking at the public transportation system and kind of a lot of recommendations that go along with land uses that support transit. Number four is complete streets, and you know, we're looking to create a complete streets policy in the next year. Five is looking at land use, looking at, you know, where those different investments make sense in different areas. How do we promote connections between communities, between the neighborhoods, and looking at, you know, where do we develop, how do we reduce urban sprawl or, you know, curtail that, if we think it's that. Six is looking at environmental planning, a lot of the 208 wastewater planning, and then also stormwater management recommendations. And then seven and eight are interagency coordination, you know, how can AMS continue and improve their work with other agencies to leverage major projects. And then eight is creating a planning grant program, which will help put some teeth and money into connecting communities, and Heather will talk about that later. And essentially, we are looking for any sort of comments, feedback. In September, we'll come back here and ask for approval. In the meantime and after that, we'll be doing outreach. If any of you are interested in us talking or presenting more information to boards or committees, we'd be happy to. And then this will sort of be one of the major inputs into the next regional transportation plan. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yes?
Your planning areas were defined by parcel size?
Combination of qualitative and quantitative parcel size, you know, where the sidewalks and transit routes were. Densities were a major thing.
Well, you've got rural down to the Akron-Canton Airport, and I really don't know how to qualify that as rural. From here, it looks like the light is green. Sometimes you can have a parcel that is heavily used, but nobody lives there, so. And it's big, I mean, it's like Lordstown or, you know, items like that. It just seems like that is classified totally wrong.
In general, these were done for kind of like a generalized version of what is the urban form of our area. So, like, what that's a major area. Or, you know, there could be a major industrial area, say, like up in Twinsburg. But in general, just the way, you know, it's a major employment center, but the way it's developed is in like a suburban setting where you've got, you know, maybe a large business, you know, surrounded by parking and you have to drive to it. So those were more the considerations, not necessarily the usage, but kind of how it actually is, like the layout and the site, how you get there.
I think, Krista, is that actually exurban? The way we have it classified?
Yeah, that is considered exurban. And again, that's the actual location, not necessarily the how heavily it's used.
Yeah, so it's actually not rural, it's exurban. But you could call it suburban, I guess, too. I mean, there are definitely areas where you could go either way on some of these.
Well, that one jumped right out at me. You know, it includes the foreign trade zone and you know, a lot of things going on for Summit County, and yet it seems like it's not rated as a very important type of land.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this definitely, there's no value judgments on any of these. One thing, it's not to say at all that, you know, the downtown gets the most investment, the rural gets the least. It's more just to give an idea of, you know, what types of investment make sense in which areas. So, I mean, especially if you look at the past, and this is, you know, these aren't exclusive, but a lot of these are in the more suburban and exurban areas that we have classified. And so it's just looking at, you know, what types of investment would make sense where, you know, we're not necessarily saying we're going to invest in one area more than the other, but just to think, you know, how to start to prioritize where those different investments should go, sort of the overall idea. But we can definitely, you know, if you think that certain areas would, you know, portray it like the airport not as important, we can look at that.
Well, even that, it looks like Mayfair Road is, you've got slated for a sidewalk gap yet. Sidewalk gap in my mind is maybe on 619 and Arlington Road and Maslin Road where there's people actually walking on the side of the road or in the grass. And I don't care.
Part of it
God,
is
I can't
are going to do a lot more, like I said, detailed. You know, one of this is to do a pedestrian plan, which will, you know, detailed roads, look at that sort of thing. This isn't to that detail of level yet.
But if it's the basis you're starting out with,
well, and any comments you have, give them to us. We'll incorporate them into it. That's one reason we're presenting this.
It's only a draft, Tim.
Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't read your plan, so if I say this, it's in the plan, that's great. But I think EMX, with all the talent, it's an EMX, there's a lot.
This is a website.
Reach out to the communities, planning commissions in particular, as a resource for them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially some of the smaller communities struggle with the problem. They allow developments to happen, but they don't incorporate the sidewalks or connection property with the roadway systems. And if you guys could become a proactive conduit, I think that would be very good.
I think that's a great idea, and that's something we want to do. I know we're going to...
That goes along with the
like
raising taxes idea.
Like we're going to go to the Portage Regional Planning Commission and kind of give them some more data. And
I was actually there last night. At the one thing we would like to do is use this as, I hate using the word educational because it always sounds kind of high-handed, but to go out to some of the communities that maybe could use some planning assistance from us as members and help them.
A little more proactive than that. Maybe mm-hmm. we've been holding a seminar to 4 planning commission members. You guys have to become more of an active resource.
It's a a great idea.
Tap into your expertise. And they might even have a problem they can even ask your staff to take a look at.
We would like that. Yes.
Along that line, if I'm wondering if before you finalize this report, there should be some that, you know, like your comments and a little outreach to communities before you finalize even this analysis to see if there are any gaps in from local community standpoint.
I think we would welcome that, Jason, because we've been working a lot on a sidewalk plan where they should be in coming up with a transportation plan that's more geared to the local area, and yet this thing seems to be 180 degrees off of that. So we would welcome you to come on.
We have talked to Wayne Whitby and then I believe it's Chrissy about like in the Greens doing a big Safe Routes to School program, and I mean one thing we wanted to do is kind of highlight those kind of best practices that are going on, but.
Hey, Krista, have you checked communities' comprehensive land use plans?
Yes.
Each one?
Yes.
Have you incorporated that in this then?
No. I did the zoning inventory, particularly, and gathered, you know, all of those. One of the challenges is every community has their own 300-page, you know, plan, and so, you know, how we incorporate those, we, you know, want to continue to try to work with those, get feedback from the communities, you know, as we go forward with this and do more, you know, actually do specific projects, we want to incorporate their plans. I know a lot of the text deals with, you know, sort of these broader issues, but then a lot of it also says, or where communities, you know, already have, say, where they want a town center, or where they're planning on doing something would also be priority areas. So we're trying to incorporate those without having to...
What's the chances of emailing or getting this to the local zoning boards or at least the zoning department and the planning departments of each community and let them play around with it for a little bit?
We can definitely try to get that out as soon as possible.
100%.
Yeah.
We could get that out to all of them.
This presentation.
If Krista was able to gather up others.
Online, so
we could.
I've got a lot of the zoning contacts, but also, like, you know, please distribute this as widely. And
she actually gathered all the zoning codes from every local government, so I'm confident she can get their contact info.
I don't think every entity's got a land use plan. Cam, you're still working on the Greens, right, Mr. Hansen? Are you still working on your comp plan over there?
It's not completed, no. It's in draft form.
I
think you ought to be a little bit more in tune with the local, what they want to do locally, and try to incorporate it from there. Yes?
One thing that would be important for every local community to at least match this and do nothing worse, from my perspective, than the city can't come forward with an application that sometime down the road this policy group decides this will guide us, and now all of a sudden it's in conflict with the long-standing policies that may make this be a little longer, but I think we'll make it a better condition. I think you've done that to this point, which is trying to get it to that next level.
Now, Chris, you're doing a great job on this.
No.
I think it's definitely
a difficult balance for us, you know, something you guys can help with as far as, you know, incorporating as much of the local input while at the same time, you know, we're one of the only regional, well, the only regional agency for the two county area. So also trying to, you know, do give that guidance from a regional perspective because, you know, most of the local communities don't incorporate, you know, this big of an area.
Yeah, if I could touch on that, because this has come up with a couple of your comments, that's, I think, one of the staff's goals, and how far we go with that is up to you. It's a decision-making body of AMATS, but we really think there's a need also for not just incorporating everybody's local plan, because that's pretty easy to do. And that's the status quo. One thing that we would like to do is at least work with all of you on should we have some regional initiatives or policies that obviously we're never going to be a, you know, legislative body of enforcing anything, but seeing AMATS is kind of a voice for being able to say, have you considered changing this in your comprehensive plan or in your zoning? And that's where we'd like to get that equal amount of feedback. And I know that's one of the things we've talked about with a lot of the sustainability planning, things like the Regional Prosperity Initiative and even the sustainable planning grant we're going to talk about later on the agenda, is striking that balance between local plans and having some sort of a regional focus.
Okay. Yes, sir. Mayor Cruz.
I suggest also that they have some coordination with NEFCO on their planning as well.
We have had. Joe has been on the working group, and he's actually been a huge help on this. But we'll continue to do that.
If you look at the back of your 5A, you know this is on the website, okay? And I really suggest that the zoning departments or your planning, whatever your planning department is, to get this information and to print this out, at least look at it, and then funnel your comments to Krista, make it a little bit easier for everybody.
Looking for all good and bad comments, so if you see things that you disagree with, that are missing, that could be stronger, we definitely are looking for that.
Okay, very good. Anybody else? Bring your crayons next time. Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. So we'll go to 5B, traffic crashes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This year, as part of my presentation, I would like to focus a little bit more on trends and observations as opposed to locations in my presentation. Good news as far as trends is concerned, we're still going down. In fact, for overall crashes, this past year, 2009, was the lowest total number of crashes that we've ever had, at least since I've been keeping track. Injuries are continuing to decline, and so are fatalities. So that's very good news. Pleased to be able to report that. However, when I look at community trends, it only stands to reason that each community is going to probably decrease, since the overall number of crashes has decreased. But there are a few communities where I noticed what I would consider an unusual decrease. Boston Heights, Clinton, Fairlawn had a huge decrease this past year. Lakemoore, Manaway, New Franklin, Northfield. Those are a few communities that I noted had unusual decreases. And I'm suspecting that may be because either the Ohio Department of Public Safety is not getting the police reports, and in which after they get them, they process them, put them in tabular form, and that's how we get our data. They're either not being sent down to Columbus, or once they're being sent down there, something is happening. I'm not real sure, but I did want to bring that to your attention because there's money out there, and we just had a discussion about how we're all scrambling to find funds. There's the ODOT Traditional Safety Program. There's $72 million available for safety projects, and that's available for any public road. Applications are accepted in the central office two times a year, April 30th and September 30th, but you have to get those to your district office at least 6 weeks earlier. The safety funding can be used for engineering, right-of-way, or construction, and typical requests range from $50,000 to $5 million. Anyone is eligible for this safety funding. You just have to meet the minimum criteria. It has to be a public roadway, have at least 10 crashes and crash rate of one over 3 years. A local match is required. It's usually 10%, and sometimes there is no local match needed for things such as signs, signals, and pavement markings. Dave Griffith is your contact person from District 4. There's also another program out there that would primarily apply to the counties, and that's the High Risk Rural Roads Program. That's $2.3 million. The reason this program was set up is although there's not a lot of crashes on these type of roads, the fatalities are 2.75 times higher. And for any rural road with a functional class 7, 8, or 9, and it must be addressing a safety problem, and usually the projects that you should request this money for range from $100,000 to $1 million. So here's what sells. When you send your request down to Columbus, a committee reviews it. And they look at things such as your relative ranking on statewide, regional, or local lists, such as the one that we prepare. There must be a clear match between the fix and the crash problem. There should have been previous low-cost efforts to fix this problem. Your ability to fund your local share, and you should incorporate the state's safety goals in your improvements. Here's some observations from the 2007-2009 crash data. 43% happens at intersections. 25,274 crashes happened at intersections. 35% happened at roadway sections, and 15% happened on freeways. Now, 5% of all the crashes, 3,229, were animal-related, and then 2% were construction zone-related. Those come out. We don't analyze those because they really don't give us any information about what might be needed to improve a highway. Here's the types of crashes that happen. The most, and what I did was I compared all crashes with fatalities, and I had to reduce those to a percentage because we had over 54,000 crashes, but fortunately only 147 fatalities. So what I had to do is just reduce everything to a percentage. The most common type of crash was a rear end crash. Those were the most common type of all crashes, and then angle crashes and single vehicle crashes were tied for second. But if you look over here, it's interesting to note that single vehicle crashes accounted for 61% of all the fatalities. And I don't know this as a fact, but I'll bet that most of those happened on rural roads and probably involved speed and drinking. The month of the year that crashes happened, I thought this was interesting, and I actually threw a couple fitted curves in this graph. Most of the crashes, most of the crashes happened during the winter months, in January, February, December. But if you look at the red columns, those are fatalities. Most of those happened during the summer months. Once again, probably speed, alcohol, and motorcycles. The day of the week the crashes happened, Friday was pretty much the loser day as far as day of the week. We had a lot of regular crashes and fatalities on Fridays. And then this one right here, Sunday, we had a lot of fatalities. I bet that this was actually after a festive Saturday night, because here's the time of day that they happened. As you can see, most crashes happen during the peak evening rush hour right here. But look at the fatalities. A lot of them happen between 11 and 12. And then you have this spike right here between 2 and 3 a.m. And dump bars usually close around 2 o'clock. So I looked at those a little bit closer, and many of those were alcohol related. So once again, just some observations. I thought it was kind of interesting when I noticed these things. Trends to watch nationwide and in our area, motorcycles. Motorcycle deaths accounted for 13% of fatalities nationwide. And in our area, it matched that exactly. It was also 13% of all fatalities. Large truck-related fatalities are 13% of all fatalities nationwide. In our area, they were only 7%. But I believe that is because we're an we have a lot of urbanized area and a lot of other types of vehicles that probably dilute the percentage. Other trends that are emerging, we have an aging driving population that's becoming a concern, and we have quite a discrepancy in size of vehicles on the road. We have smart cars right out there next to Commerce, and that's just in the passenger car category. A change from the previous crash reports, one little change I'd like to mention. In previous crash reports, I considered crashes that happened a tenth of a mile, within a tenth of a mile of an intersection as an intersection-related crash. This year, this time, I reduced that to 5/100ths of a mile, and one of the big reasons I did that is the new highway safety manual is now out, and that they define a crash as being 5/100ths of a mile, and it also better defines crashes in urban areas. We still rank crashes on a composite score. We take into account total number of crashes, crash rate, and severity index. It's a more fair way to score locations. 134 highway sections met the minimum criteria. That's table 1 and map 1 in the crash memorandum. Many of the same locations that were near the top are still at the top. I'm not going to go over each location. 281 intersections met the minimum criteria. That's table 2 and map 2 in your memorandum. And table 3 is freeways. Now, freeways were handled a little differently. We used the analysis that ODOT did. They analyzed the entire state. A freeway location can be either a section or an interchange. And in our area, 57 locations met that minimum criteria. Concluding, total crashes, injuries, and fatalities are continuing to decrease. That's good news, but let's make sure that that decrease is truly a decrease and not because maybe accidents are not being reported. Try to make sure that your community sends those reports down to... Yes?
I want to ask you a question right there. Do you know if the Department of Public Safety has a new software program or something? There's too many communities not getting counted.
I'm not sure. I'd have to check.
All right, we're doing a little something, too. Does anybody know anything about this at all? Anybody have any other problems? Because I know New Franklin and Clinton, we're going into it. I don't know about the sheriff's office, but I've heard this from other communities outside of our planning organization here.
I have not been able to figure out exactly what's happening. All I know is something seems to be lost somewhere. I'm just not sure where it's happening.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Clinton. I'm sorry.
All the locations in the handouts eligible for safety funding, they all met the minimum criteria. And I do have those locations sorted by community, by the door. So instead of sifting through this find your community, you can easily, you can pick up another version of it, and you can see which locations in your community are eligible a little quicker. And contact Dave Griffith in District 4 for more information. Although crashes are decreasing, we're still concerned about motorcycles and multitasking, texting, and what have you. Some of those things are hard to quantify, hard to come up with numbers, especially with texting and that type of thing. Feel free to contact us with any questions you might have or anything about a specific location. And as I mentioned, tables 1 and 2 are available listed by community. Now, I'm not quite done. Many times I hear people say, boy, they just don't build cars like they used to. And there may be some truth to that. I came up with a little video I'd like to show you. That's an that's a 59 Bel Air and an 09 Malibu. This was done by the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety. It's a frontal offset crash. Now that Bel Air, I'm sure, is a much heavier car.
What about the Chevy?
Now, I don't know about you, but I think I'd rather be in the newer car. now, they don't really make them better than they used to. They make them better and safer. And we also design roads safer. So that is definitely contributing to our decreases we're seeing. And reading the information about this test, the driver of the older car was probably, they think he would have either been killed or seriously injured, and the driver of the newer car at the most suffered a leg injury. So I thought that was interesting. Just something I wanted to present that I thought would be just a general interest. So we are definitely making, not only in our engineering and in many ways, we're making progress with safety and things. So.
Okay, thank you. You did a fantastic job.
That concludes my presentation. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer.
Mr. Pepper.
This is some of the most best news things I see out here. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you.
But please do distribute to pedestrian information. I know you have access to
the pedestrian?
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to ask him. Anybody else? Any other questions? You did a great job on that. Thank you very much. But how can we like to entertain a motion for this, but there's so many communities don't have the counts right. How can we do that? Do we base it on?
One thing I would suggest is I think you could approve it by motion with the proviso that if the data are updated, we'll definitely modify and incorporate that into the report in order to help all the communities, especially with safety applications.
So moved.
Second. Okay, any other discussion? We'll make the amendment the way you said. Okay, yes?
Just one point for everybody. We did this, we went back through the state records and found that one of the biggest problems was the police officer writing the report, whether he called it State Route 59 or East Main Street. And that gets down to the state, and somebody that's never been to Kent has no idea that East Main Street is State Route 59. And that accounted for a lot of the differences.
Okay. I don't think we've had this many communities at one time spiked up like 200% to 1,000% like that. But anybody else? Okay, we have a motion on the floor in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any motion passes?
Where are we? At 5C?
Yep.
Connecting Communities Planning Grant Program. Motion requested on this.
Hello, everyone.
It's Heather.
My name is Heather Davis-Riddle, for those of you I have not met yet. I'm discussing item 5C on the agenda. Please review the attached memo and notebook. We would like to bring you up to speed on the Connecting Communities Planning Grant Program, which will make available two $50,000 grants. The AMS staff has brought this to your attention before, but we're now ready to get the program underway. This program is designed to assist communities in funding a planning study to help implement Connecting Communities, which, if you remember, Krista just spoke to us about that, presented it to us, actually. You will see in your handout a list of eligible activities, such as streetscape plans, access management plans, and transit-oriented development plans. The funding will be used to hire a consultant to study an area and develop a plan. The recommendations from these studies will be eligible for AMAS funds. The AMAS staff is recommending that a Connecting Communities Planning Grant Task Force be created to score, review, and recommend projects to the Policy Committee. The AMAS staff also recommends that the task force include members of the Policy and TAC Committees, as well as members of the Connecting Communities Working Group. The staff recommends these seven people to serve on the task force: Policy Committee Chairman Mayor Al Bolas, City of New Franklin; TAC Chairman Jim Bowling, City of Kent; City of Streetsboro Jeff Pritchard; PARTA Brian Smith; Metro Park Serving Summit County Dave Whited; Summit County Ohio Public Works District 8 Liaison Nick Slossenheiser; and of course our AMS Director Jason Segedy. The applications for the grant will become available on our brand new website September 1st. We will send out an email reminder at that time that will have a link most likely to our website where the application is available. The deadline to submit the application will be October 15th. The Policy Committee, want to make sure that you understand this, the Policy Committee will still have final approval of the recommended grant recipient. This final approval will take place at the December 8th Policy Committee meeting. The AMS staff is asking for a motion to approve the creation of the Connecting Communities Planning Grant Task Force as listed in your memo. Anyone have any questions? Yeah?
I know we had talked about planning monies and grants as the work plan was being developed. I think establishing a committee that basically will be a first-time attempt at this, wanting results in just a few months, is a pretty aggressive task. I think a way to maybe hedge that would be to use a committee or a group that's already set up, which is your TIP subcommittee, who has a history of reviewing and setting criteria. They are all technical people, and I think as a first stab at this, that might be the basis for looking at this plan grant study. I think the participants become generic. They become the Policy Committee Chairman, the TAC Chairman, whoever that is, and that's how I think. That's pretty aggressive to ask someone to do that, because the Policy Committee is going to review the criteria, which, you know, when we do that before, that could take a couple of times.
Right.
So I'm thinking at least you have a group set already that's done a task like this, and maybe you establish criteria might be something.
If I could speak to that, I would actually recommend against that for two reasons. One, we want to get the money out the door as quickly as we can, and we think we can meet that schedule. But secondly, I think part of the intention was to have a lot of the people in this group did serve on the Connecting Communities Working Group, and I think they'd be a little more familiar with what we were trying to get out of the recommendation. So that would be my two cents on that.
I guess my comment would be that is the first, second, third, fourth largest cities in the area aren't on this committee.
More comments, please. No comments at all. Nobody else, because this is news to me too. All of a sudden, list. Can I have a motion? Do you want to make a motion? Nobody wants to make a motion on this either.
I'll make a motion. Can we adopt the?
You got to start it off with a positive, so you can say yes or no.
If somebody wants to amend, I have no problem with that.
We do that too. You said the deadline?
Resolution.
Last page.
Connecting community program. Someone wanted to add more people to this list. I have a problem with that.
We have a motion on the floor with.
I'll second so we can discuss it.
A second, Mr. Gonsi. Thank you. The suggestion is to add more people to the committee, Mr. Coletta, and to represent some of the bigger communities if you want.
I think so.
So we could do that. I mean, they're looking at accepting the applications beginning September 1st with the deadline being October 15th. I mean, there's been a smaller window with issue one. But I don't think it's much different than NEFCO on the representation of the people or anybody like that. I mean, as far as technical, you know.
Well, I think at least from Summit County, at least we could have Akron and Cuyahoga Falls.
Okay.
And Portage, I know Kent is represented only because Jim is the... But, maybe Mickey or Portage County Engineer or
I'm sure you'll be back. Okay. Do you want to represent the city of Akron?
I cannot. We'll have some.
Okay.
I mean, are these all policy committee members or city of
Akron? No, it's a mixed attack and policy.
Okay, if we can get somebody from Akron on that.
Okay.
Cuyahoga Falls. Definitely like to get some more on there. Portage County, one of the commissioners.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Let's just go ahead and put down a commissioner or... Anybody jump in here if you want.
The Orange County Commissioner would be free.
They'll be free to talk.
One distinguishing thing here is that they don't make the final decision.
They have to bring it here.
And then this, that's different from the other. Just as a point.
These folks are just reviewing the applications, going through the process of scoring them, and then bringing the top, doesn't specify on that.
Don't know how many we'll get yet. There's going to be two projects recommended, but we don't know how many. I would guess we'll get 10 applications if I had to throw out a number.
Bring them here to this board, then you vote on a 20, just say in the back page. Deadlines will be done. The deadline is October 15th, so the following meeting we could go ahead and present it to the policy board.
Right.
Which would be sometime in October.
December 8th would be the next policy committee meeting.
Oh, okay. So what do you folks think? Do you want me to go ahead and add the Akron and Cuyahoga Falls reps and the commissioner from or somebody from Portage County?
I'll make that a motion.
I'll second.
You amend.
I accept the amendment.
Amendment to the resolution.
Okay. Just duly note that we will have a representative from the city of Akron, cities of Cuyahoga Falls, and a commissioner representative from Portage County. And we have a second on the floor by Mayor Gonsi. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I'm sorry?
All in favor of the amendment?
Yes. And I would do a motion for the. But it did the amendment all there. Right, now we need a motion for the amendment.
The only way we
can
talk about it is.
Oh, you already did that when he first said. He's second. Okay.
We just need to vote.
I
feel
all right. Any more discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Does anybody know what we voted on? I'm sorry. Okay, so we can handle that. Get these people lined up and then find out Shelly wants to do what she wants to get.
We'll contact the commissioners and see which of the three of you want to serve.
Okay, I'm going to move along here. We're at 5D, AMAS contribution to Broadway Main Project. Who wants to do that report?
That was me. 5D is just a discussion item. Since this agenda is going pretty long, I won't belabor it. But I wanted to bring your attention that City of Akron and ODOT are applying for the Main Broadway Wolf Ledges Grant Interchange. A good news, bad news thing is I think it would score really well this time because it's the fifth. That's the good news. The bad news is it would score really well because it's the fifth worst freeway crash location in all of Ohio. I think it's a really important project. It's really, when we did our plan, that stretch of the West Leg is our number one highway priority. Dave just put an air photo of the two interchanges up there. You can see how close together they are. AMAT signed on to the track application as a joint sponsor, which just meant we support the project. However, by doing that, I did want to bring to your attention that an option we would have to help ODOT and the City of Akron, and I think this is a project that's beneficial to the whole region. There's 120,000 people a day that drive this. Would be that perhaps in the future, if they get funding, we might want to consider, and I would recommend that we do, contributing some money to the project for planning and preliminary engineering. We've done planning studies like that in the past. So with that, I was just going to turn it over to either Ralph and or Jack if you guys want to say anything about the status of the project or the track application or anything like that.
Yeah, this item's really just an update. It's been 5 years since we really started what we were calling the Central Interchange Study. At the time, the project was rather extensive, and the cost was approaching $1 billion. And a number of years ago, we actually stopped development upon the project because of that cost. The inflation and the recession basically made the project unfundable. And since that time, we started figuring out how to approach this to pull out items to improve the situation at a lower cost. We've done some work developing some improvements and Spicer-Johnston bridges, which are actually between this picture and Central Interchange to the east. We have an interchange modification study at Federal Highway right now, looking to close one of the Wolf Ledges ramps. And just recently, the City of Akron got earmarked money to continue the study of the Main Broadway interchange, which is the tangled mess in the middle there that Jason has called the functional equivalent of the 59 Bel Air. I think that's a pretty accurate description. We did quite a bit of study when we were originally doing Central Interchange, and right now we're continuing. We've been able to restart development on this project, pull it out of the other one. We've been doing a lot of work. The city primarily has been doing a lot of work on Main and Broadway going north and south. both into the city and down towards the Firestone Tech Center south of here. It's an important corridor for the whole community. And we're looking to develop a project that's somehow fundable, which isn't easy to do in the financial situation that we're in now. I think we're making some pretty good progress on that. We've got a number of applications out there. We've got some commitments. We think we've got a pretty good shot at safety. We've got an unofficial commitment from an internal ODOT program called Major Rehab to start getting us part of the way. But a lot of sponsors that actually have money to give out look very kindly on projects that have a lot of support and get money from different sources. And at some point, I think it would be very helpful if AMAX put some money into this project to help the development of it, and it would help it get other funding from other sources. Do you want to add anything to that?
We started to rekindle this one. ODOT has been very helpful with District 4. We have a track application now for some funding. The city of Akron has spent close to $70 million on that corridor, starting at 277 coming up Main Street, coupled with the private investment there. The University of Akron is to the north of there, so is the Metro Transit Transfer Facility. As Jack mentioned, we're going through the major new program. That's TRAC. What we're trying to do is supplement their funding with called Tiger 2, which is stimulus money. So we've applied for that. So together with those two, we hope to piece this interchange out and get it constructed. Right now, we're for those who are familiar with the planning process, it's called the plan development process. It's a 15-step exercise we have to go through. We were at step 5 when the project was pulled, so we're able to start again, and we want to get to at least a logical milestone there with our design. So that's what we're trying now. Hopefully, by the end of the year, we'll know whether we receive the construction funding for this project. That's when we'll really kick it into gear. So that's about it.
Any comments, questions? We're going to move on. Okay. Thank you. We'll go to 6A. We're going into resolutions to see how difficult this will be. We'll go into Resolution 2010-13, your attachment 6A.
Okay, I'm just going to present that. This is on the Sustainable Communities Planning Grant Memorandum of Understanding, and two guests today, Amy Fulford and Amy Kulishek from Enlight Advisors, which is the group that's putting this grant application together, and thank them for their patience throughout the long agenda. And they will be here also to answer any questions on this item that you have that pertain to the Memorandum of Understanding. Specifically, what this is HUD, which is the Department of Housing and Urban Development, USDOT, and the USEPA have come out with the joint planning grant program, actually very similar to what AMETS what we just discussed for connecting communities, but on a much larger scale for a lot more money. And the Fund for Economic Future, which is a philanthropic organization that covers Northeast Ohio, was interested in pulling together a multi-county, multi-MPO application to try to get some of this funding to help look at planning, again, almost exactly the same issues we're dealing with in connecting communities, transportation choices that would include an affordable housing component, interregional coordination, things like that. The memo has a little bit more detail on that. The deadline for the program applications is August 23rd, so it's quickly approaching. The grants will be awarded between $500,000 and $5 million. The Fund for Economic Future and Enlight have pulled together all the MPOs. We've had several meetings, all being us, Eastgate and Youngstown, SCAPS in Canton, and NOAC up in Cleveland, as well as representatives from all the central cities of the region and 12 different counties. And what this MOU would say basically is that we all agree to to enter into an application for the grant. That's all it holds us to. It doesn't require any financial contribution from AMETS at this time. It just says we're basically willing to sign off on the application. And then in the future, if we receive the funds, you know, we might need to commit some staff time, which I'm confident that we would be able to spare to help with the planning effort. So I would recommend approval of it. SCATS and Eastgate, which are the MPOs in Canton and Youngstown, have already approved it. OACA, it's on their board agenda tomorrow up in Cleveland. I would anticipate that they would approve it. So my recommendation would be that you would approve the resolutions so that we could enter into this cooperative agreement.
Would you like to make a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Who made the motion?
Mayor.
Robert.
Oh.
Okay, got it. All right, we have any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We'll move on to resolution 2010-14. That's your 6B.
Thank you. This resolution has three projects in it. It's amend the TIP. First one's Clean Lamaston Road, Ridgewood Road. These are all EMAS projects. This first one, the sponsor, Fairlawn, has requested to cancel this project. The second one, Eastern Road. This is in Harvardon and Norton, as well as Chippewa Township. The amendment is to move construction from fiscal year 11 to fiscal year 12. And the last project, Maslin Road, is part of a reconstruction project. It's part of the Goodyear redevelopment effort. And the amendment is to move the right away from 10 to 11. And the staff recommends approval.
Questions? Comment at all?
So moved.
We've got a motion on the floor. Could I have a second?
Second.
Have a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Resolution 2010-15.
There are several new projects to be amended in the PIP as well as some existing ones. The first one is I-76. This is a new bridge rehabilitation project in Portage County in Palmyra Township. Using federal interstate maintenance as well as bridge funds of 2011. The next project is Akron Cleveland Road in the village of Boston Heights. This is bridge, new bridge, bike and hike trail. And engineering is scheduled for 2011 using earmark funds. The next project is a new one also, Akron Peninsula Road. This is throughout the village of Peninsula. Resurfacing project scheduled for construction in 2011 using earmark funds. The next project is existing reconstruction project on Glenwood Boulevard in the village of Reminderville. And the amendment is to move the engineering from 9 to 11. Revise the funding amount as well as revise the funding amount for construction in 2011. The next project is Sagamore Hills Park Loop. This is a new project to upgrade the trail in the park as well as add parking spaces. This will use earmark funding in 2011. The next project is an existing one, the one we were just talking about. On I-76, this is a reconfiguration of the main line and the interchanges with Main and Broadway and Grant Street. And this is to move the engineering from 10 to 11 and revise the earmark funding law. This last project is also on I-76. This is the Martha Avenue Corridor Study, which is again part of the Goodyear redevelopment effort. And the preliminary engineering is scheduled for 2011 using earmark funds. And staff also recommends approval of this amendment for this project.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion.
So moved.
Mr. Bales, second?
Second.
Okay, Elwood Palmer, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We're at resolution 2010-16.
Back in June, ODOT awarded funding under the Clean and Green Program for bus replacements for the RTAs in Ohio using state attributable CMAQ funds. Both Metro and Parna were awarded funding. Metro was awarded about $2 million, and what this amendment will do to the TIP is to add four hybrid electric diesel 40-foot buses. And for Parna, which was awarded $375,000, This would be for the purchase of 5 diesel light transit vehicles, and the staff actually
exchanges anything. Have a motion? Mr. Roberts made a motion. Do you have a second?
Second.
Mayor Johnson. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Okay, we go to number 7, other business. We don't have any other business, do we? I mean, it's been a little long today, I'm sorry. It's been about 1.5 hours, 1:35. The next regular meeting will be Wednesday, September 29th at 1:30, and the AMAT staff will contact us for the special committee, subcommittee we have going. Okay, meeting adjourned.
Good job.
Thank you, everybody.
Good job.
We'll get yellow shirts next meeting. Yellow shirts. Everybody's got to wear yellow shirts.
It'll be in the minutes.
There's this.